Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3, Episode 13 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. Today, I'm joined by someone who I've looked up to in the esports scene for quite a little while now, Mr. Oliver Bass. How you going, brother?
I'm doing fantastic. Wasn't expecting that. Look, that's a wild statement coming from a dude like you who has been one of the kings of OCE for quite some time now. You guys have been kind of ruling that region for a little while now. So to say that you look up to me is a bold thing. I'm doing great. I'm excited. It's Monday for me right now. I know it's Tuesday for you, but it's like kind of winding down the day. Been a chill day so far. Been a good one. So doing good.
Love that. Now, I've always admired your casting. I think it's always been amongst my favorite, to be brutally honest. Yummy's up there, but I like the way that you sort of do casting. That's always been a sweet spot. So I'm glad to have you on, brother.
Yeah, I'm excited to be on. And also, if Yummy ever hears that, he's going to lose his mind. He's going to be like, the Americans taking over OC again. Yeah, already has enough of formal. He doesn't want to deal with another American down there.
Nah, he roasts me too much. So he's been put down on the casting list for me. So he deserves it.
Oh, good. So he does that to everybody. All right. Good enough. Yeah. Relentless. I like it.
Love that. But yeah, so I guess what we'll do is what we always do on Mind Clickers, and I guess that's start wide and then sort of narrow in a little bit closer. And then obviously at the end, we can probably have a bit of a chat about the upcoming London Major, because that's obviously the hot topic of discussion for the moment. So let's get into it. How did you sort of get into esports and, you know, enter into that game? Take us way back.
Okay, so esports is a little bit different than Rocket League esports, if that makes sense. Yeah. When I first got into esports, I was actually into CS. I was in like high school. Like, it was the beginning of high school for me. CS was a really popular thing. Like, the trading scene is really what got me into CS. And then after the trading scene, I got into the esports scene.
Yep.
I went to IEM Oakland. I was literally talking to the guys I went to last night, or with, like, that I went to the event with last night, and we were looking back at the event trying to figure out which one it was. It was IEM Oakland 2016. I went to it, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I want to do more of this forever. Kind of just casually watched for a little while. And then when COVID hit, I was already streaming, doing some casual stuff like online. One of my viewers was like, hey, we're going to do like a viewer game. You want to try casting it? And I was like, Sure, you know, I'll try it out, see what it's like, kind of test the waters. And after doing that once, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I want to do more of this as much as I can. Joined a couple community leagues. Shout out to both IGL, Indie Gaming League, and Sunless Con. Sunless Con put out a video talking about them at the very end. It was like, if you want to cast, hop in. And then
I love that.
I did. 6 months later, I started getting paid for it. Basically, people were willing to actually pay me for my work. And then I'd say 3 or 4 months after that, I kind of went, okay, there's actual, like, you know, stuff here, and then went full time. And so I've been about full time for about year and a half or so, somewhere around that length. Like, beginning of 2021 is when I went into it. And now here, halfway through 2022, I'm doing it full time, living, like, you know, in a house that I'm paying rent with through all of this type of stuff. So yeah, huge shout out to IGL for sure.
Wow, phenomenal. So started back in the CS days. Did you have a lot of CS knowledge around that time? Did you used to play it quite a bit with, like, your mates and stuff like that?
I was terrible at the game. That's the thing. Is that, like, I was horrible at the game, but my friends were like LE, Global Elite. A couple of them were somewhere in the MG ranges and kind of like messing around. So I'd hop online with them and just kind of, you know, do whatever. And then as everybody did back then, they all had Smurfs. So they were like, oh, okay, we're going to throw and go into a random account so that you don't absolutely get obliterated when you go up to our ranks.
Dang, love that. And it sort of clicked during that first couple of sessions. And then I guess, looking back now, did you ever think that you'd be in the position you're in?
Yes and no, if that makes sense. Part of the reason that I did sort of like drop everything and go into casting esports is because I did notice the momentum that I was having. When I first like got into casting esports, like Rocket League esports in particular, I'd already been watching and like sort of like casually like viewing it, but I wasn't really invested in it. As soon as I actually started trying it, I kind of felt the momentum, if that makes sense. A lot of people were very responsive to the way that I was casting, and a lot of the teams that I was working with when I first started getting paid were like, yo, we haven't heard someone like you before. Like, I feel like it was the energy that was a little bit different than some of what the scene was kind of seeing at the moment, which was a little bit more professional, a little bit more, how do I put it? Just sort of like, it was made for a very specific sort of feel when it was on camera. That sort of hyperactivity that I kind of bring was not as common. And I kind of felt like that momentum. So did I ever expect to be where I'm at right now? Maybe one day, but to have done it in what was basically about just underneath 2 years was kind of surprising. Like, Hyferia and I always track this. We got to RLCS from casting in just underneath a year, basically, was like where we had gotten hit up for. And we were kind of just sitting there like, huh, that was that was quick. I don't know. So yes and no, I guess is the best way to really put that. Like part of me does feel like I was going to get here, but I didn't think it would be at this trajectory, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember having a chat with, I had a chat with a couple of casters. I think it was Matsy, and he started in CS as well. This is way early on, Mike, because I think like early season two, I think. And it's always interesting to hear sort of that entry into casting, because obviously everyone has their own sort of angle. And obviously, you know, I asked Matsy the same question, you know, do you think that, you know, did you envision yourself, you know, getting up to that higher end casting? And, you know, he said, you know, yeah, maybe, but it's definitely, you know, sort of positive to hear that sort of confirmation bias from yourself where you had that underlying confidence, yeah. You felt that maybe tingle in the air of your casting, and it sort of paid off in the end, didn't it?
I mean, I would say it paid off. Like, listen, I know a lot of people who, I'm 23, so I'm like, you know, getting into my mid-20s, basically starting to get there, and I have a lot of friends who are getting out of college, who are doing stuff, and they're kind of sitting here like, I don't know what I want to do. Mm. I wake up every day, like, absolutely certain that this is what I want to do. Like, there are days that I think you can attest to this as well, because you've got such a unique job, such a special one. Even when it does, like, you look around and you go, man, this is such a cool job. There are days where you wake up and go, oh, this is a job. Like, it feels like a job, you know? Yeah. And even on those days, I kind of look around and just sort of realize, I'm like, no, this is still everything I want to do. There are tons of people out there who are floundering, who have no idea if they even enjoy what they're doing for a living right now. And even during the roughest days, like, it's that kick in the butt that this is dope. This is cool, man. There's just nothing like it. There really isn't.
Yeah. No, it's crazy because, you know, I guess going on the back of that, you know, I had a chat previously. I think it was a short while ago, back to one of my university lecturers, and sort of told him what I'm doing in this scene now. And he's like, really, that exists? And it's just sort of this idea that, you know, a sport and exercise scientist working within esports, you know, it's very, very, very not known and very uncommon. And I think, you know, I had a chat with someone else. I think within Australia, like, I'm the only actual, you know, accredited sport and exercise scientist and sort of counselor working within the scene. So it's crazy, kind of crazy to think of that, the very, I guess, minute scene that I sort of it is. But it also makes me optimistic towards the future because, you know, what's the normative going to be like in the next 2 years? What's normative going to be like in the next 5 years? How much growth are we going to have?
Especially with North America putting so much into the collegiate scene of esports right now. They are trying to foster the next generation. And I feel like that's only going to trickle into other places. We saw it start in North America. Now EU's got its own collegiate scene for Rocket League. It's going, it already exists in Australia with AEL and stuff like that, but it's going to continue to grow as time goes on. And that's the coolest part of this entire thing is that, like, we are just getting started with esports. Yeah. There is so much to go, and we're already a $1 billion industry. It's crazy how far it's going to go.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy when you compare esports to traditional sports as well, and I guess the growth trajectory that esports has had. I feel like it's become a lot more, I don't know the right way to sensationalized, but a lot more picked up, I guess, especially within the youth nowadays. You know, you look and chat with some youths maybe 5-10 years ago, you know, everyone was playing traditional sports, but nowadays, you know, the amount of people that are playing traditional sports is, I guess, slowly decreasing because a lot more people are playing online, they're playing, you know, games, and they're sort of getting involved within esports. So it's interesting.
It's really cool to see, to be honest, more beyond anything else, especially because it's like, I think you and I can kind of agree, when we were growing up, it's not like, you know, it wasn't, oh, how dare you play video games, but it wasn't one of these things where everybody looked at it legitimately. Like, if I was playing a video game for more than like an hour a day, my parents were like, are you okay? Like, is something like, why are you doing this for that long? And then now if you're playing more than an hour a day, you're like, no, I'm getting my grind on. I'm getting good at the game. Like, I'm going to make sure that I'm solid at what I do. For some of these kids, it's like 4 or 5 hours a day that they're training every single day just so that eventually they can get a look at a professional team. Like, the culture has shifted so aggressively.
Yeah, 100%. And it's crazy. I think I had a chat, I can't remember who I had a chat with, but sort of comparing, you know, traditional sports team, you have, what, maybe 12, 15 players, but on a Rocket League team, you've got 3 players. So the competitiveness is so much harder.
It's especially considering also that it's like, when you look at traditional sports, you can see that there's, like, you know, there's multiple avenues. Okay, you want to be a good soccer player. All right, cool. You can go to, you know, the Premier League. If you want to go to English Premier League, you can do that. Or you don't get into that, go to La Liga. If you want to go to something else, you go to Serie A. Like, you can do, like, a bunch of different, like, leagues and stuff. if you're not top 16 in your part of the world, it is so hard to get recognition in Rocket League. And that's like just Rocket League. You go look at other esports like, say, Smash, where it's yourself. You have no team around you. If you're not like, I don't know, top 20 rated in your country, you're not really getting the recognition that you need. And that's like, it's such a different vibe. It's so different in comparison, for sure.
And it also questions, you know, obviously, you know, I've got a lot of DMs previously in the past from a lot of people, I guess, coming out of high school and thinking, hey, you know, I'm really interested in esports. You know, what sort of, what should I do, or how should I get started? And it's always, you know, almost the same question. I've even had chats with parents as well, actually, because their kids were actually really interested, which that alone telling me that parents messaged me interested about esports, you know, I wouldn't have believed it.
Dude, but, like, I real quick, because I have a friend who just did a Fortnite LAN in Florida recently. He did it at Full Sail University, and it was like an XP LAN.
Hell yeah.
The whole thing about XP League is that it's for kids. They make it, the cap is 16 years old, so it's supposed to be for youth. He told me apparently parents were like coming up to him like, yo, will you coach my kid in Fortnite? Like, I'll pay you just to coach like solo private sessions with my child.
Oh my
13
God.
Year olds, 12 and 13 year olds, their parents are asking them to do private lessons so they can get good. What?
That's crazy. Like, I don't believe it. It's phenomenal. You know, is that you know, you're, because I feel like within, I sort of think about it, you know, if I was in high school now, you know, would the normative be everyone's talking about esports, everyone's, you know, jumping on and playing with each other a lot more, you know, watching esports together? Because back then it was like, I went home, I sat on my Xbox, I played Modern Warfare 2 for 6 hours. You know, esports in my mind wasn't a thing.
It's different now. I think it's like, especially when you look at like how, I guess, normal it's become. Like, listen, man, I will never, like, I've never been a fan of him personally, but Ninja changed the game. When a dude who with blue hair played Fortnite all day, and all of a sudden NBC was talking about Ninja, the game changed. Like all of a sudden people were looking at video games and going, oh, there's money here. Like, there's really something, not just in the video game, but in the entertainment part of it, there is money there. And that's like, again, not my favorite content creator, but you gotta give him credit for what he did in changing the game and changing like everything.
Crazy. I guess on the topic of, I guess, you know, getting into that sort of entry level casting, getting a tease for it, I guess in the early days when you were, you know, first getting onto your casts, did you have a lot going on in terms of preparation? I've got to prepare for this. I've got to look into, you know, what these current teams have been doing in the past, you know, maybe start writing a few scripts to prepare what you might say. What was the mindset back then, and how did you prepare for some of those early casts?
So the mindset back then was kind of just like, be comfortable. I think when you start casting, your biggest thing is making sure that when you're on mic, you're comfortable enough that you're not going to feel flustered or you're going to make silly mistakes. Now that I'm a couple years into this, it's not necessarily as much that. It's more making sure that like I've got all the proper notes and that I've got everything sort of prepared. But when it comes to like note taking and stuff like that, my main thing was Liquipedia. Like everything Rocket League, if I knew what teams I was going to be looking at, I went and checked their background, figured out where they were coming from. And I always recommend that for casters. I think that this is a really good time to talk about that as well, because we've got the major coming up, and the B stream is going to be, you know, casters that are not a part of the normal like team. Probably they're going to be the people who have not seen OCE play, or what's it called, you know, OCE play, or South America play, or APAC play, or any of those type of places. And in those situations, if you know you don't like have info on those guys, go back, go look, figure out what their narrative is, what narrative you can build. And I think that's the big thing, is that like, it's story building for me. Your information is only information if you can use it in a way. So if you go in and are like, okay, this team scored this many goals per game, and they scored this often, and they have these many assists, like, that's great. Where are you going to use that though? Like, if you don't have a way to use that, don't necessarily keep track of stats or like notes and stuff like that. So for me, when it came to note taking back in the day, it's a lot of like, figure out how to craft a narrative out of that, how to make a story that someone wants to listen to. And again, I kind of feel like that does go back to sort of my style of casting, which is a little bit more conversational rather than play by play, you know, chop it up. And that allows me to create that story a little bit more.
Oh, I love that. Was there a point where it's like, you know, this storytelling is something I definitely want to start working on more and more and more? This is the way that I want to cast.
I think there was a point, again, I'm going to probably talk about him a lot today, but shout out to Hyferia.
That's all right, man. Do it.
On the way, like, we came up together. Like, that was our whole thing, is when we first met, we were like, yo, I like this duo. Let's run this until we're both at the point where it's like we are big enough that we can do solo, but also still together. And Hyphira and I basically, when we were on our way up, was like, what is going to separate us from the rest of the pack, if that makes sense? What's going to make our voices unique? And very quickly, we realized that conversational casting is something you don't necessarily hear out of every caster in RLCS. The big duo, I think, that most people like look at when they talk about, you know, that hybrid conversational is Stumpy and Cole, because they're just so free-flowing when they're on the mic. And so when we started to realize we kind of had that ability and that chemistry and that banter back and forth, we started leaning into that a lot. There were a lot of bits that were just kind of nonsense, but they still sounded good on cast. And we'd have our very hype and serious moments, but creating a narrative and being able to create that hype behind it without just using, you know, volume and excitement during the cast was something we really leaned into. So I think probably somewhere when we first got onto RLCS was when we kind of started realizing, like, hey, we've now made it that people trust us to be good at what we're doing. Now let's make it unique. Let's make this something that they haven't heard before, you know?
I love that. Shout out Halfuria. I definitely think I might have to have him on Mind Clickers as well. I'd be keen to hear his story and his mindset about things as well.
It's, bro, all I'm going to say is he's had such a different trajectory because of the fact that he lives in Netherlands. He's worked on RLCS majors as a Dutch caster. Like, he's done so much stuff in Dutch now that is
I didn't know that.
What I've heard from him is so... He's done some weird, like, he worked for Cooler Master for a whole thing because they've got, like, studios in the Netherlands. Like, it's just, he's got a whole story. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Oh, 100%. If he's listening, then we're going to hook that up, definitely.
Yes. I'll send him a message right now.
love that. Interesting narrative. I definitely love it. Do you think that coming into it as a duo caster and having experience as a duo caster, being able to blend back and forth and I guess have that sort of conversational flow, there's a lot more advantages over that rather than just going in straight solo all the time?
Oh, to any caster who is listening to this, listens back to this, whenever you get this, find someone you are comfortable with. Having a co-caster is just, it changes everything. It really is one of these things, because when you get into a cast, normally there's two things that you're kind of picking up on when it comes to your co-caster: their energy levels and their handoffs. Those are like the two primary things. If someone like me who is energetic, I bounce off the walls when I'm casting, basically. If I come in and the other caster is very technical, very straight with their stuff, they don't necessarily throw that energy at it, and all of a sudden I'm still coming in with the same sort of energy and like aggressiveness, it's not going to work. And similarly, if I go into it and I'm expecting very quick handoffs, you know, 10, 15 seconds, and then boom, the other caster picks up 10 to 15 seconds, boom, right back to me. And instead, I do a 10, 15 second stanza. They take the mic for about 30 seconds to 45 because they're trying to have more of a longer dialogue. All of a sudden, those handoffs feel weird and awkward. And when you have a co-caster like that, not only are you more aware of their tendencies for both their handoffs and their energy, like at which level, excuse me, they keep their energy, but it's also just easier to have that dialogue. Like, Hyphira and I will go back on cast and go, this was bad, this was good, this was mediocre, let's see how we can, you know, change all of that and make it to something we're more perfect, you know, we're more proud of. And being able to have that conversation with him without it feeling awkward is what makes it so much better. So having a co-caster like that, yes, I highly recommend, find someone you are comfortable with. That does not mean exclusively work with that person. I should preface that. If you have the ability to sort of be like, hey, I got hit up for a cast, they're asking for a co-caster, I'd like this guy on, it makes it a lot easier for you to navigate. And it also does get bigger eyes on you. I think having a solid duo can make it really good for you to just have more attention on yourself as you continue to grow, you know?
Oh, I love that. I love the fact that you brought up also almost like, you know, going back and doing a casting replay analysis of yourself, you know, watching back. And that's phenomenal. I really like the fact that you do that, because I think you can only do that, and that just highlights different areas, like you said, you know, strengths and weaknesses, and you can build on the weaknesses and maintain the strengths, which is definitely a phenomenal way to look at things. So big props there, man.
Hey, listen, man, VOD review, everyone's got to do it, whether it's professional players, whether it's like casual players. If you're not looking back at your own stuff and criticizing yourself, you're never going to be able to learn. Like, you, half of casting is being able to have those days where you do have a bad cast and admit, that wasn't my best work, I can do better. Like, it's so important to not always think that you're the best guy in the room. That it doesn't help you. It never does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess there is always those times where, you know, you can take those, I guess, to sort of unfortunate casts. And I think that, you know, I guess if you are interested in casting, for anyone listening, you know, if you ever do have a bad cast, or maybe you've had a bad cast in the past, and you're thinking, should I get back into it? I think it's only natural that maybe sometimes, you know, you have a mistake here, or you say something you maybe shouldn't have, or you could have done something better. So it's always worth just looking back and just, you know, giving it that red hot crack.
That's the thing, is it like I always encourage people. I have a lot of people who come up to me and they're like, do you think I'd be a good caster? Do you think I'd be ready for this? All this type of stuff. And my reaction is like, listen, I like to say that people have a spark when it comes to casting. You either like have that initial sort of drive and like I can feel that you're going to be good on air, or you might not. Mm. But the reality is you're never going to know unless you try. Like, yep. It's just certain people, you'll have conversations with them and you won't really know how they're going to do once they get on mic, and then they'll blow you away on mic. And then certain people, you can hear them behind the scenes and you go, okay, I think you should be good on mic. And then they're just, you know, they have their struggles. But it all depends on how much effort you put into it. I think one of my favorite stories I've ever had was meeting Yummy Cheese Man for the first time. I love Yummy. He is a great dude. He's a really nice guy. But Yummy, everyone has heard his casting. He bounds off the walls. He's super energetic, super, like, you know, he's quick-paced with it. You've had conversations with Yummy behind the scenes. He's not like that at all. The dude is very subdued. He's very, like, he's chill. He's very calm. And so, like, the first time I had a conversation with Yummy going into a cast, I was like, oh, he's, like, super calm and super, like, super vibes right now. Like this is not what I was expecting. I was expecting more energy. Then we get on cast, boom, energy through the roof. And I'm just kind of like, But if I had met Yummy before I knew what his casting was, I'd be like, all right, we'll see how he is as a caster. And then it just sort of like he immediately clicks. So you never really know. To anybody who's kind of sitting there like, well, I don't know if I'll be a good caster, try it out. Find out, man. Not everybody's going to be able to have, like, I bound off the walls just normally. And I do it on mic. Certain people on mic, they're going to be better. Certain people on mic, they're going to struggle. It's just how it is, man. And that's like, again, shout out to Yummy Cheese Man, because the fact that he can turn on that energy like that, that is not easy, dude. It's not easy.
I don't know. Did you see that? Did you see that Reddit clip of? I think it was on the Rock League.
Oh, the Farm Simulator.
Yeah, the Farm Simulator. Yes! That was good.
Yes! Dude, I didn't even know they had
esports.
So
that was a good clip.
It was a LAN. They had people in person.
Literally, yeah. When?
Who organized this? Like, who gets the people together and go, okay, so you guys are very good at Farm Simulator. You want to fly out to Australia, or, I don't know, drive from wherever you are in Australia and go and competitively stack hay? That's what I think the competition was.
Oh, my God. It was phenomenal. I actually watched a couple of YouTube videos afterwards of that, and I think I saw, I don't know if you've heard of the game Euro Truck Sim.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they had an esport for that as well a while ago, and it was like, who can do like the fastest delivery and stuff, and that got intense as well. It makes me crazy.
That's so sick, though. It's so cool that, like, again, talking about expansion of esports, there would never have been an esport for that 10 years ago. 10 years ago, there was no way, not even a chance, like not even a $30 gift card for first place, like no.
$30 gift card, literally. But that's, I guess, you know, that's the thing about it. You know, now we're getting into a time where, I guess, you know, as we mentioned about it earlier, there's just going to be more and more variety in terms of esports, and I guess even more casting opportunities, which is, you know, a niche that you can also fill into as well. Has there been a time where it's like you've been provided an opportunity and they're like, you know, we want you to cast this game, but you've never cast that game before, you don't have no experience in it?
So, okay, so when it comes to no experience of, like, playing the game, not really. Everything that I've ever approached is something that I've at least attempted to, like, learn about. I think kind of probably the scariest one would be Rogue Company. Rogue Company is a small Hi-Rez, guys who make... Yeah. So I'm friends... Do you know who Rome DMV is?
Maybe rings a bell, but yeah, go on.
He was on CRL Worlds recently. He's done, like, a bunch of different casting for, like, a bunch of different stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know you.
Yeah, so Rome is, like, the face of their competitive scene. That's how he got, like, big in esports. He was the guy on their competitive scene. He was throwing small tournaments, doing like buy-in days and like having like tournaments that he was like doing himself with, you know, hey, $10 buy-in, we throw it into the prize pool, it goes back to whatever, we'll shuffle it up, blah, 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 blah. He's running tournaments like that constantly. And then he started doing their professional scene, doing all of that type of stuff. And then this year he got hired to run the whole thing. Like, he is the guy in charge of their esports scene basically now. He's an employee at Hi-Rez for that.
Oh, cool.
He asked me to be a part of that, and while I knew Rogue Company, I had friends who were super into the game, and I had played it with them. I was not 100% familiar with the title, so I kind of just had to, you know, dive in and figure it out. But that was, like, probably the most unfamiliar. Similarly, I did something with Fall Guys, but the difference with Fall Guys is, surprisingly, I'm good at Fall Guys. I don't know why. Okay. That's like one of those games. We Cooler Master hired myself and Hyferia to do some Fall Guys stuff. I get brought on for the first one. They really like me. I ended up winning one of the games during the tournament because they were having us play during it.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then the second time they bring me back around and they're like, all right, try it again. I win again on stream. So it was like just kind of like, that was just more of like a vibe. And that was like one of those things where it was like, I didn't know the game that well, but I just kind of went in and had fun with it versus Rogue Company, where it was like, the opportunity is there. Take it because you know it's an opportunity. You're not necessarily going to feel as comfortable, but you got to do that at some point. Like that.
Exactly.
I feel like everybody's going to have to do that if you're working in esports at some point. You're going to have that position where you go, I've never done this before. What happens?
Yeah.
Try it, you know?
I love that. That's such a big mantra that I live by. And I think that I've instilled within a ton of players I've worked with in the past and obviously present as well. You know, sometimes opportunities come by and you might think, this is a bit weird. This isn't really for me. But, you know, at the end of the day, what's the worst can happen? Maybe you lose a bit of time that you could have done doing something else. But, you know, on the offspring, you know, you learn maybe this isn't for you, but maybe you learn it is for you. There's a ton of phenomenal things that can come from just saying yes. It's been a massive one that I've worked with, you know, in traditional sports as well, just providing opportunities and just helping people understand that opportunities are good.
Yeah, just try. And I think that that's also something I feel like I've had to explain to a lot of casters in a certain way is that, like, casting is one avenue into esports. Like, there are many ways you can approach this. If you feel like, you know, you don't want to be on mic, but you still want to work on esports productions, there are people who do broadcasting, there are people who do observing, there are people who do graphic design, like, all this type of stuff. And so I feel like that also applies for players and stuff. I'll have players who are like, I don't think I'm good enough to get on to blank team because I'm not there yet. Okay, play as a sub for a little while. Get some experience with these higher-level teams and scrims and stuff like that. See how you feel. Okay, you don't want to sub for somebody? Go play in a bubble league and something like that with a little bit, you know, less pressure, not trying to go for RLCS the entire time. And I think that's like an important thing is to recognize that there is not one path into esports. I mean, shout out Zaniel. Zaniel is my favorite example of that. That was a kid who basically was like barely in the scene. He was like getting known in bubble scenes and he went, all right, you know what? RLCS teams aren't really giving me a shout right now. They're kind of occasionally I'll play on like a decent team, but they're not really looking at me. Let me go grind six mans as hard as I can. And once I get good enough in six mans, teams will start giving me a shout out. And that's exactly what he did. And so it's like there are different avenues. There are different ways to approach stuff. Don't necessarily bog yourself down to just that one core way because like you said, when an opportunity approaches, do what you can. Try your best. And that's all you can really do is try as much as you can.
Exactly. 100%. I love that. And I know that there'll be a ton of people listening back to the episode who will really take that and really, you know, run with that. So I really appreciate that. Love it. I guess I remember, it was a while ago that I had a chat with that Leadcaster. He sort of said that sometimes he has, you know, different keywords that he writes down in different situations, like phrases that he wants to say, or I must say this. Is there anything? Oh, hang on. What's that? Is that the red
this
book?
This is the phrase book. Shout out Corelli. Corelli did a interview with Vaudible a little while back, and one of his biggest tips was that, like, if you're starting to get hung up on phrases and stuff like that, write the phrase at the very top and then just every synonym that you can. And I have pages on pages. Like, this goes back probably like to, I don't know, 10, 20 pages deep for like stuff from different video games. Like,
oh, wow. Okay.
And it's just kind of basically synonyms and stuff. So yes, phrases are big for me. One of my favorite ones that I remember is just that, like, if anybody is ever wondering, by the way, casters don't typically focus too much on chat. Every once in a while, they'll have the chat open and someone will get into their head and they'll focus on that. And that's the time where you have to all of a sudden, you have to sit down and go, okay, I'm not going to pay attention to chat anymore. I'm closing chat and I'm ignoring this. But it's like, it will, every once in a while, you'll get one where it was just like, it kind of hits a little bit harder. And where's the one? Somewhere in here. I kept on saying out of luck or something like that. They're all out of luck and on stream. And I caught myself saying it over and over and over.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, some dude in chat, it is the only one that I remember. He's like, if he says all out of luck one more time, I'm turning the stream off. And I was just like, I immediately flip into the book. Where is this? I've got this somewhere down here. Where it's just like all out of luck. Da, 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 da. No, that's nail in the coffin. I've got like a whole page dedicated to that now because of the fact that no more luck. There it is. No more luck. All out of luck. No luck in sight. No more fortune in their favor. Couldn't quite figure it out. No such luck. Unfortunately out. Opportunities passed. Another chance squandered. Like, I have a whole page now. This dude got in my head that one time.
Dang. But I guess, do you look at that as a blessing in disguise almost?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is like, the reality is that, like, as much as you're always going to hear people be like, hey, ignore the haters, ignore the criticism, take it with a grain of salt, mm-hmm. but still, if it feels like to you personally, okay, maybe they do have a point,
yeah,
listen to it. Like, you know, take it into account. I think one of the best things I've ever heard, this was someone, I want to say it was the head of eFuse. It was like eFuse's, like their main marketing guy was like, don't ever take criticism, or what's it called? Don't ever take advice from someone you wouldn't ask for criticism for, like from, basically. And I think that's one of the best ways to put it is that, like, if you hear criticism from somebody and it feels valid to you, okay, identify it. But if it's from somebody random who has no relevancy to what you're talking about, don't take it too harshly because they don't know you. They don't have any idea who you are as a person. And that's like a really big thing for me is that, like, I have this book not because, like, fans and stuff were, like, getting mad at me for, like, my phrases and stuff, but because someone like Corelli, who I look up to as a caster, was like, mm-hmm. hey, this is a really good thing, and a lot of casters should do the same. And so that was, like, a big thing for me is that, like, when I realized how useful this was, I just started, like, taking down notes for that. So I have notes for that. Oh, I should also say, you asked about, like, notes, like, preparation. I don't necessarily also have notes for preparation, but I do have score sheets. I keep track of everything cast. Like, I have a column for each player, and then each player's got, like, goals and assists, and then basically the game scores over time, like, timing and all that type of stuff. Like, I have...
Oh, phenomenal.
I can go back. I bet you I've got some... Let's see. Where is it?
Oh, here we go. He's yelling back. He's yelling back.
I will have stuff for Renegades. It's just... Let's see. How... Oh, that's EURC. Oh, my gosh. This goes back really far. Holy cow. What the... Oh, this is back when I did the twos tournament. Okay, maybe this might take a while before I find Renegades. It's somewhere in these books. This is one of three books I currently have of these. I have fit, and there's more behind the scenes. These two, I've got another one. One of these is already, like, full, and then I've got a third or fourth one over there that's completely filled as well. So, yes, I do take notes. I take a lot of notes.
So, do you do them? Do you feel like the scores are in after each game, or?
I keep track during the game, basically, is the way that I'll do it. Is that, like, so it's all tally marks, so if someone gets a goal or assist, I'll just tally it on, basically, and then go throughout the entire thing. It comes in handy for, like, weird little stat stuff. I'm a huge stat nerd, so I, like, write down a lot of the stats that I, like, go over. And one of the bigger ones that I remember that I was able to pick up because of the fact that I had been keeping stats is AAA did Torrent versus NRG, like, 2 weeks ago. And during that, NRG scored 2 goals in game number one. After that, they didn't score another goal the rest of the series.
Oh, wow.
For 3.5 games. Because of that, I kept track of the overtime amounts. I kept track of the, what's it called? I kept track of, like, you know, how many games were played. I was able to, at the very end of the series, go, it's been 27 minutes since NRG last scored a ball. And I knew that because I kept track of notes and stuff like that. So it's like, keeping track while you're going through it is really useful for just those little things later on. Even if it's not, you know, the most mind-blowing stat on the planet, it can be kind of useful and interesting for certain fans who are like, oh, that's, you know, that's neat. And,
yeah, that's the seasoning. That's the spice at the end of it.
Yeah, there it is. That's the spice, exactly.
Love that. Ooh. I think being able to sort of look back at those, you know, important things and sort of, do you ever look back at, like, previous, obviously you've got that notebook and you've got, like, obviously the first notebook you ever got. Do you ever look back and think, you know, wow, I've come so far. I've written out so many notes. I've done so much up until this moment.
So I don't know where it is. There, I have the notebooks from, like, original when I first started doing this. And I look back, it took me a while to get a system. It probably took about a month or two before I found a system that I was, like, comfortable with. And even that, I'm still trying to figure out, like, certain ways to take down notes. Like, my Fortnite notes are barren in comparison. So my Fortnite notes is literally just basically, here's the top 10 for the first game, top 10 for the second game,
okay,
stuff like that, and just keeping track of their points and stuff. And it's like, I wish I had more to go off of because it's just not as thorough. It's not as deep. There's not as much that I can necessarily talk about versus my Rocket League ones. And even the Rocket League ones can get kind of weird. Where's my Gladiator? Because we just did the APAC qualifier. And for APAC qualifier, I had to figure out how I wanted to... Oh, there's the Torrent Ghost one. I wanted to figure out how I could do a bracket reset. That I have... That's confusing as heck to try and go through. So what I did was write it down somewhere. It's in one of these books. I don't know where. But yeah, all right, whatever. It's one of these books, basically, but I had to completely redo my notes. I had to take, like, what was the initial, like, score sheet, chop it in half, throw it so that I have series one, series two, complete an entire another, like, section for each of the players so that I could take notes and, like, figure a way to divide it so that I could actually read through all of that. So it's like, yes, I do go back and look at them and go, wow, I've come so far. But at the same time, I'm still looking at these notes going, I feel like something could be improved. Like, have you seen Stax's notes?
He's No, really.
He prints them out. He has a printout sheet with full-on text boxes. Like, like, it's a, what's it called? Like, Microsoft Outlook. Like, it's like,
oh, he's got, like, templates and stuff, like, ready to go.
Yeah, he's got templates for everything. Dude, it's impressive. Like, it's straight up impressive. I've got no other word for it. I, like, that was when I knew I needed to step up my note game, is when I saw Stax's notes and I went,
oh, hey.
Gotta find that at some point. I'll send you that after this. After that,
yeah. Episode. No, I want to say that'd be interesting. That'd be sick. Another topic, another thing that I was really interested in. What's I guess casting in your room and your own personal environment where everything's the way you like it versus casting at a venue and somewhere else. Like if you go to an RLCS event or if you go to the Cool Master Fall Guys event. What's the differences like? And because I know a lot of people, obviously players, the guys I work with and know most, obviously a lot of players love their own personal environment because they've got their own microphone, they've got their own chair, they've got their own desk. Everything's the way they like it and the way they've always used it. Then they go to a LAN event, it's like, this isn't my setup, I can't play as well, I can't perform as well. And there's obviously that sort of internal bias that takes over. So do you go through that or is it, sort of differentiating between that?
I would say it's more, so it exists for sure, but it's more differentiating, I think is the best way to put it. It's two very different feelings. When I'm at home, I can kind of like, the biggest thing for me is it's more of like, I have all of my notes and I'm comfortable with the information intake that I have. So I've got a 3-monitor setup. My main monitor will always be gameplay or whatever I'm watching. So it's like, if we're in game, it's just going to basically be the game up. If we're being given a feed, like someone showing us a camera angle of the game, then it's going to, still be on my main monitor. My right monitor is always for Discord and for notes. I've always got stuff up on there. And then my left monitor is to be able to look back at the broadcast and be able to see, what do I look like? How should I adjust it? Are my volume levels looking good? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
When you're in person, you're no longer the priority. You and your duo are at that point. Is that you have to feed off the energy around you. And someone told me that before going to my first LAN in Atlanta, where they were like, hey, don't focus on your energy and the game's energy. Focus on the crowd and the energy that the crowd is bringing in, because that's going to be more important. What would be a more technical cast when you're at home, make sure that you're dotting your I's and crossing your T's on everything. Forget that. Focus on the energy of the crowd. Focus on the way that everybody is feeling and lean into that. A good example was like when we were in when we were doing Northwood versus I think it was UCF, University of Central Florida, for CECC, which was a collegiate LAN in Atlanta.
Yeah.
We had to feel that the energy of the crowd was like, hey, we don't care about Northwood right now. We are cheering on UCF. We want to see UCF upset this team. So what do? Every time UCF's getting closer, we're hyping it up, making the crowd start to get loud, making sure to lean into that. Versus if I were at home, I'd probably talk a little bit about UCF and try and hype them up, but I'd still probably be a little bit more even because I don't feel the energy of the crowd that is leaning into UCF, that is trying to build this narrative towards that. And when you hear, like, it's different when you can hear through your headphones, someone misses a shot and the whole crowd goes, oh, and like you can hear that. You know it's happening for people when they're watching at home, but when you're in your chair, you don't hear that reaction. So it's a little bit less, when you're at home, it's a lot more technical, it's a lot more planned out, it's a lot more thought out. When you're in person, it is just energy. It's raw energy and reaction. It's what you feel in that moment. It's I wish I could do it justice, like explain what this means in a better terms, but I don't unfortunately have to speak exactly what it feels like.
It's one of those things. I guess you can sort of symbolize it to, I guess, a player who plays, at home versus playing, at the LA Major. I had a chat with Chrome last episode and he told me, obviously Daniel being up at LAN for the first time, being in front of all the fans, being in front of a crowd for the first time, obviously a big experience for him, and that's something different. And I guess from that experience you took from casting at those LANs, did it make then after that going back home a lot easier and casting at home a lot easier, do you think?
It made it both easier and it also made it feel weird, I guess is the best way to put it. Because when you're online, you can have a good back and forth with someone. Like, there is no reason that you should not be able to. But it's a little bit different when you can stare someone in the eyes and just be able to bounce. Like, there's just a little bit of a quicker draw to everything you say. And it feels a little bit more cohesive. When you're online, it feels great. There's no problem with it. But it's just, it's hard to explain. And I think one of the best things examples is when Hyferia came to the States for the LA major, he then stayed a week in San Francisco with me where I was living at the time. Mm-hmm. And when he came to San Francisco, we had gigs lined up to work together. So instead of, splitting off and doing our thing, we were like, all right, let's grab one microphone, set it up. We'll just pass it back and forth throughout the entire day and like have it, be a mock studio cast. Then we would go back on to doing APAC and stuff. And we were there like, man, this is good, but that snappiness, it's just not the same. Like, it just didn't equivalate. It was similar, but it's just like, I wish I could put it into words, but there's just a little difference that I can't explain unless you try it, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Gotcha. Mm. Interesting. I love that. I feel that. I definitely understand that.
I definitely got to be similar. I mean, for you, it's got to, I have to wonder what the pressure is like versus like you're at home talking to the boys' ears, trying to calm them down, but like knowing, they've got their own little safe space.
Yeah.
Versus when they're starting to panic on a stage like that, I have to imagine that it's like you can feel the pressure from the other team. Like, it's a much hotter environment overall.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And I think that's an interesting point as well, because it's almost like when you are up on stage, and I think, I think back to Sweden, and it was, what was it? It was when we were, 1-2, and we were going against Furia. And if we lost against Furia, we'd lose and we'd be kicked out. And it was sort of almost, we didn't put up a facade, but we were confident at the same time. But we also knew that, Furia, hang on one sec. Apologies for that. Furia, this big team, number one seed, the absolute beast. But then as soon as we got into it and we scored a goal, it's like, oh, it's doable. And then that's where the energy came out. That's where the confidence came out. That's where the screams started happening. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, game one's over, game two's over, game three's over. There's the sweep. And it's almost like you put up a facade initially, but then as soon as the floodgates open, that's when the real confidence roars. That's when everything starts to unleash. And I think you can sort of look at that online as well, but it's definitely different in LAN, like you said. Because you can see them as well. You can see their face reactions. You can see how they're reacting to goals. It's different.
You're feeling the vibes of the room. Like, you really are. I feel like that's the best way. And I've seen that with players, too, of players who are like, okay, I'm ready to go now. Like, you go look at, like, again, I think Daniel's a really good example of, like, Daniel at the beginning of LA was, like, nervous. You could tell. Every play he was making, he was second-guessing himself. He wasn't really sure how to approach what was a much higher-speed environment. Mm. And then you get to, like, the final days of the event, and he's pre-jumping people on the ceiling. Like, he just didn't care anymore. He was like, no, I'm here to play. I'm ready to play. Like, that difference was so notable. I mean, I even saw that in Renegades. Like, Fever, night and day difference in between, like, when he was first on LAN in Sweden versus him playing in LA. Him in LA, people were taking notes. They were like, oh, this kid isn't just for real. He's like, he's going to be a problem for a lot of these North American teams and these EU teams.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely interesting. I think you're able to build off that momentum as well gradually over time. Yeah. And then obviously when you have dips, like, I guess, I guess in a realistic world, we sort of obviously didn't make London, but still very optimistic for Worlds, of course. But I think you're able to sort of understand that momentum bias, whereby you go from making the first major, making the second major, not making the third major. It's like, okay, but you still have that underlying momentum that you can ride on. And I think that a lot of teams are going to have that as well, because obviously with Dig, NRG, some big teams that obviously didn't make London, they're still going to be optimistic and have that underlying motivation and confidence towards Worlds, I think. So it's an interesting sort of pathway.
I could talk about momentum in esports all day. I think it's an underrated topic because people always like to act like momentum's a factor, but then you have the people who are like, no, it's not. It doesn't play. Motivation and momentum. I'm like, no. I will forever be a person that says motivation does change how a team's going to play. Like, I forever state that. And I know certain people who disagree heavily with that opinion, but it's like, I especially like the APAC qualifiers were one of my favorite examples for that. It was way, way, way more pressure on the shoulders and way more to go for the APAC South teams than it was for APAC North. Yep. Detonator had already gone to a LAN. Tokyo Verde had already gone to a LAN. APAC South had missed out on two LANs in a row. If they missed out on the third one, that was their final chance for the year, and they were done for. That was it. GG's. the momentum and the pressure they felt in that environment is greater than anything either the APAC North teams were feeling at that moment, in my opinion. It just was, because you want to prove something. And certain people will say, well, that's not going to make a difference. I truly do think it does. If you don't, power to you. I really do think there's a huge difference based on how you enter into a competition, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think it's a fine line between motivation and expectation as well, because obviously you can have that underlying motivation that you feel confident, you understand the situation, but then to have an expectation on top of it whereby, oh, I should easily win versus these guys, it's no worries, and that all of a sudden you become motivated to becoming overconfident, and that sort of almost disrupts the pattern as well. Which I think is an interesting one, because I remember having a chat with Nick, and then the following episode I had a chat with Eclipse, and we talked about expectations. And I think there was they had two different sort of perspectives on it. And I think expectations is just one of those things whereby if you put an expectation down, all of a sudden you sort of build up this almost just, you know, artificial pressure on yourself. It's like, okay, I have to perform today or else I'm dead, or else I'm gone, or, you know, some massive big barrier or big wall that's sort of not real comes into play. And does that very itself help make a player more motivated? Potentially. But it also makes a player feel, you know, that extra stress, that extra pressure, that extra ability to make sure they're calming properly, you know, all these extra external factors that come into play, I think.
And I think it depends on the player is the big thing, is that certain players, that is going to make them. That is going to be what motivates them to perform at a higher level.
Yeah.
Certain players, though, they're going to crumple underneath it, and you can just tell. And I think that's like, and again, it's why momentum is such a big thing. If a team thrives on momentum and they get the first two games in the series, you can probably expect them to wrap it up in the third. But if a team does not thrive on momentum and they've got that little bit of pressure in the back of their mind, closing out a series becomes a lot more difficult of a task than it ever was before. And I feel like, there's so many different examples through so many different esports, but I do feel like that is a very real thing. Is that the pressure isn't necessarily going to make or break somebody. It depends on who they are and what their reaction is to said pressure, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Definitely. It's going to be crazy. And I think that's why I'm keen for, I guess, you know, almost segueing into the London now. You know, we've got a lot of strong teams in there and a lot of teams that can perform and potentially have upsets. So I think it is going to be really interesting. And I think maybe how about we do almost like a round one predictions?
I can do that.
With the man himself. So let's start. Do you have the bracket up? Or
I was going to say, I'm literally pulling up Liquipedia right here and now. Easy. I can go through this.
We can do takes, my take versus your take, and see if we align or see if we disagree on something. It'd be interesting.
Okay.
All right, so G2 and Gladiators. Do you feel like that's the biggest one way? Or I had a chat with NCJ. Shout out NCJ as well. He used to coach Three Rats.
Yeah.
And he told me, you know, if there's a team that could upset G2, it's potentially Gladiators, because a lot of people would overlook them tremendously, and they've been grinding hard. It's an interesting topic.
So there's a lot I can go into Gladiators. It's funny that this is who we start off with, because I literally just sent like a whole spiel. Lawler asked me for some notes on, you know, hey, what are the Gladiators' strengths and weaknesses, and how do you rate them? And so for me, this is not just an uphill battle. This is going to be probably the hardest like fight out of any of the matchups in round number one. And the reason why is because G2, almost everybody has low expectations for them right now because of how they performed at not the last LAN, but at the final one, or at the previous one. G2 comes in with this new roster. They're looking really good. They all of a sudden win LA. But everybody still kind of got that thought in the back of their mind, okay, what if they flop again? What if they all of a sudden, you know, drop the ball? And they haven't really dropped the ball yet, but everybody's going to have that sort of pressure. And you know G2 is going to have that pressure as well. I think that's a problem for Gladiators, is they're coming into this one, you know, feeling like, all right, let's see what happens. Not necessarily carefree, but sort of like, go with it. Let's whatever. We'll lay our cards on the table. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Versus G2, who's like, we are not losing this. Like, I just don't think G2 has any plan in the world to lose against the Gladiators. And I am a huge APAC fan. I am the APAC guy. I will rep APAC till the day I die. I don't know if there's a way that Gladiators win this series. Like, if Gladiators take a couple games at this event, I will be ecstatic. Them winning a series is a little bit far-fetched. It's a little bit too much for me, I feel like, unfortunately.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a realm where, G2 look at gladiators and they're like, oh, doesn't even matter. We're just going to, you know, not even look into them, not even think about them. We're just going to win it.
I think there is a world like that. And I think the only reason I would think that G2 might prepare a little bit more than that is that's what happened to FaZe. FaZe, like, basically had their matchup against Detonator and went, oh, we'll figure it out. And then all of a sudden it's a 1-1 series and they go,
oh, hang on.
Oh, no. Yeah, just start to pay. So I think that G2 is smart about their stuff. They've got a great coaching team behind them. Like, yep. Shout out to Sathya 1,000%. I think that they're not going to be allowed to do that. But I could see G2 coming into that one, having the Gladiators just all of a sudden dive bomb them on every single, on like every single 50-50, and they go,
yeah,
what is happening right now? I don't think that they, I don't know if they'll win based on dive bombing every 50-50, but it would make an interesting series. Yeah, an interesting back and forth.
Just triple commits, double commits, just left, right, and center. That'd be good.
That was literally what I was talking again when Lawler asked me for that stuff. Like, the two things I said that they like had a benefit was their speed and mechanics in a region where there's not a lot of mechanical players. Those are probably the three most mechanical players in the region, and they're faster than the rest of the teams. But those double and triple commits, and like when a 50 goes wrong, it really goes wrong for that team, is going to be a problem against a squad like G2.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a good one, and that's the first game, right? That's like game one.
Yeah, that is game one out the gates. That's at 8 a.m. tomorrow, 8 a.m. tomorrow for me, which is not sure what time for you guys. Probably like somewhere around like what, like.
It's like 1 a.m., I think. 1 a.m.
Yeah, I was going to say like midnight?
Yeah,
like
1 a.m. 1 a.m. 1 a.m. on the 30th for me, which is
20. Gosh.
Yeah. Furia K-Corp. Now, I'll be honest. I watched a few K-Corp's games throughout the EU majors, but I didn't really know too much about them. Obviously, I'm well equipped with Furia. I personally have Furia taking this just because of their major in L.A., that gives me confidence that they could do another run again. But what are your thoughts on it?
I don't disagree with you on that. I feel like this might be one of the closest matchups we see in round number one.
Okay.
This is because, so to sort of give you, I guess you're saying, have you learned about like Karmine Corp in their background?
I've learned about them sort of in like, the recent, yeah, most recently. Yeah, yeah, a little bit more.
Yeah. So for me, that's kind of why I see Karmine Corp potentially edging this one out and taking this is that like they have a lot behind them right now. Astral and Itachi have been waiting for a moment like this. They won WePlay last year. When they won WePlay, pretty much everybody went, this is the next best team in Europe. These guys are going to take that. Oh, wait, they're struggling to make it to majors. What's happening? Like, oh, it just like, it crumbled apart. Pulling in Nolly, who very clearly was not satisfied with how Guild treated him for the way that they like worked with him.
Yep.
It feels like this is one of those teams that, again, going back to motivation, this is a team with a lot of motivation right now. They want to prove that they truly are one of the best in EU. They're not just another EU team at this point. And I think that's going to really hold them ahead of a lot of other teams. The issue is they run into the South American number one seed who is looking to try and hold on to a world championship spot. They want to make it straight to the world championship and get to avoid the wild card altogether.
Yeah.
They make a top eight here. They basically guarantee themselves that spot. So it's like, I would probably agree in saying Furia. Like because I actually think that Furia is that good. I think they're like criminally underrated in comparison to a lot of other teams that just kind of exist planet wise. But in addition to that, also, I'm the alternate region guy. If I bet against those teams, I'm doing myself a disservice as well as the rest of the team. Like South America to the core, man, every time.
Love that. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a really good game because I know that, I guess I've seen from Twitter, the KC fan base is like so overwhelming, right? Because I think Shyster did one of like ratio threads or whatever he did.
Yeah.
And the KC fans got like 4,000 likes or something. It was crazy.
Dude, they're vicious. What's his name posted? I haven't checked in on this, but last night Spaceman posted a tweet which was, K-Corp losing 3-0 to Gladiators in the lower bracket, and bro, people were just like, what are you talking about? They were just like, are you insane? Like, what?
Oh my god.
That was funny. I was ecstatic about that, bro. I'll take anything that puts the Gladiators up top. I'll take that 1,000%. Let's go.
100%. I'm keen to see how they go. I'm really, really excited for them.
It'd be dope.
Who's next? V1 Endpoint. I've got a bit of Eclipse bias because I had him on Mindclickers recently, so I've got to go Endpoint just because I feel like they're looking pretty solid. Obviously, they beat BDS in the last EU regional.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they've really connected with Archie now. They've really found how they can use Archie. And obviously Metzer, he knows he's qualified for Worlds as well. He's back at Worlds. I feel like they've got nothing to lose at this point. So they're just going to have, you know, go into it with you know, obviously they're versing V1 and it's a big matchup, but I feel like it might be like a 3-2 in my mind potentially.
It's another close one, I feel like. And again, This is kind of one of those ones where you look at it and you go, it's a coin flip. Like, honestly, you don't, there's no clear winner here. I might back V1 just because I feel like V1 are land beasts. One issue that Endpoint has had is that they don't perform on land. The last two, last two lands, they just haven't shown up in a way that they were supposed to. Like, you look at Sweden, and pretty much they came into that, and everybody was like, this is the new EU team. These are the new EU. Oh, and they're out round one. What huh? Like, just kind of, like, curious as heck as to what happened with that team. And I think that part of it is going to be relieved, but I am curious to see how they do in an environment like this, considering it is a new roster. Like, yes, mm-hmm. Archie definitely clicks in. I have no disagreement with that. But it might take them a second on land. Because, like, we've seen good that point with pretty much every team this year, is that, like, they're good, but when they get to land, it takes them a second to reignite that spark.
That's a strong point. That's valid. That's valid. I like that. I like that a lot. And obviously, I saw V1 during the day one, and the amount of tall Com was putting out, he had confidence.
That kid got a mouth, and I love it. He's so, like, it literally felt like disrespectful. It's like, it's not even disrespectful. Like, it's not even one of these things where he's, like, directly, like, trash-talking the other team. He's just sitting here going, I'm about to get loud, I'm going to get proud, and I'm going to make sure that you hear it every single time. I love it. I just, it's so good. So good. So, yeah, V1. V1 just a little bit. Just a little bit.
It's going to be good. All right. Moist and Optic. Optic. Change from Envy to Optic. Interesting. I feel like Moist win this.
Yeah. So this is a cool one. This is an interesting conversation that I actually got to have. So when I went to LA, I spoke to Ryze after the whole event had wrapped up, basically, after they had just lost the grand finals, after it was like the final night of the event before everybody was leaving and all this stuff Sunday night. Yep. We went to the hotel where all the players and the staff and all those people were working, staying for the entire event. We talked to them, you know, drank with them, not with the players because they're literally children, but, like, you know, talking with, like, the coaches and all the type of stuff. Like, I had a really good conversation with Prof from KCP, like, just talking about, like, all this stuff. Eventually I run to Ryze outside, get into a conversation with him about it, and his exact words, he was like, wait till we go home to London, wait till we have a home crowd. Ooh. We're not losing. He, like, guaranteed it to me. He's like, we're not going to the lower bracket, we're not losing. And I was like, okay. All right, that's what I like. He's like, no, we're taking, like, they are confident. Moist basically saw what was London or what was LA and went, this is, you know, we should have taken this. This was our chance. Mm-hmm. And I feel like going to London, where it's a home crowd for them, GG's. Like, I don't know. Moist is probably my pick to take this whole dang thing. Mm-hmm. It's Moist, EDS, or G2. And I see Moist being the highest out of all of them because it's a primarily English team.
Yep. Home ground advantage. I feel like, it's going to be a, I feel like that could, do you reckon it could be a sweep potentially? I feel like it'd be massive with a sweep.
Part of me says yes, because we've yet to see Dries perform on land. Dries mm-hmm. has had two poor performances in a row. If he has a poor performance here on Optic, I feel like people are just going to start to question the kid, which is a bummer because he's a good player. Yeah, I don't like 100%. That people are that critical of him. Like, a lot of people have been overly aggressive to that. Like, he's 16. Give him some time. Literally. He's got a long career ahead of him. Like, oh my.
Hmm. It's going to be interesting. Definitely going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. BDS Secret. Is there a chance for Secret here, you reckon? Obviously, with Seiko joining Monkey and Extra, all French roster. They've got French Com buff now.
French Com buff.
I don't know if there's a chance for Secret.
Well, I mean, hey, listen, last time we saw an all-French combo, Vitality started to fall off the face of the earth. So, hold on a second before we start to get into that. I mean, there's a chance. I think the issue for Secret every time I've watched this team play is that they're good, but they have yet to be able to sort of overcome what is their biggest obstacle each time, if that makes sense. Like, they are always a solid team, but when it comes, like, time for them to perform against a squad that they are that they're not supposed to, they can't ever get over that threshold. Like, they did in South America. I got to give credit to them. I believe that they ended up taking one of the regional events. Like, they actually won the entire thing, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was SAM Regional number one. So they came into spring, beat Crew for number one, but after that, they got third place twice in a row. So, like, they've been a consistent team, but their ability to get over that hump when those big moments happen has just kind of held them back. I don't see BDS being the starting point for them to change that. Like, I'd love to, but, like, it's BDS. You said it yourself. Seiko looks insane. Mm-hmm. Like, just...
I think I met with Secret in LA, and they're a bunch of... They're really nice guys. So
yeah.
I definitely, there's a sweet spot for those guys, but it definitely feels like they're going up against the Titans. So
people probably have BDS winning this entire thing. Like, that's most people.
BDS, like you said, BDS Moisture too. So
yeah, BDS Moisture too. I mean, that's one thing that does suck about working in esports. You start to learn these people, and they're no longer just competitors on the screen. They're friends of yours, and you're sitting here like, I don't want to say that you're going to lose.
Literally.
That feels wrong. It just feels wrong.
Yeah, like, it does. You got to have some sweet spots for some people. You got to. Even though at the core, you know, potentially there's no chance. But SSG, KCP, big one. Obviously in LA, Space Station beat KCP 3-1. But it was the kids' second appearance on LAN. What do you reckon?
I mean, it was two close games in a row, if I remember, in LAN as well. It was three. It was 3-1 goal games in a row, and then the final one, SSG, ended up blowing them out.
Yeah.
I feel like this is actually one where I might say the Pioneers take this. Space Station have been typically slow to start. We saw that in LA. I think part of it was, again, you know, it was Daniel's first LAN, so I don't want to fully say that, but I'm going to back Pioneers here just because, A, again, you know, it's sort of, they're people in the region that I know. I've been friends with the entire Pioneers team. I love all three of the lads that are on there, as well as their coaching staff. But I also feel like this was another sort of motivation thing. Talking to Pioneers coming out of LA, their whole thing was like, look, we are done being looked at as just another OCE team. We want to be a team that is on an international level, a threat to everybody. And while they proved that in OCE by winning two out of the three regionals, which... Why couldn't you guys win 3 out of 3? Because, I mean, or at least gotten second in the first one, because that is what I bet Yummy Cheese Man on, and now I got to do Da Bomb on air at some point somewhere. I've got to basically, like, do a giant hot sauce taste test, and it's going to suck. But, like, they have proven that at this point they are hungrier for something more than just competition in OCE, and I think that that's going to be big here, is that they're coming into this one. They've been training in EU. They've been in EU for, I think it's like a week or more now, training at the London Esports facility. Like, they've been doing tons of, like, work. I feel like this is going to be, I want to say Pioneers coming on top. I wouldn't be surprised if Space Station comes out, but I feel like this is going to be a close series either way. This will be a 3-2. I do not see this being another 3-1 or a blowout on either end. I think a lot of people are underestimating Pioneers in this matchup.
I've got to agree. I feel like the kids know what they need to do now.
Yes.
And it's almost like that repeat against SSG. You know, they've got evidence that they can at least take a series, and they can go close series with them as well. It's going to be interesting, because I know that also that SSG, obviously chatting with Chrome in the previous episode, I think they only flew out, or they only got to London like a few days ago. So obviously the kids are going to be there for a little longer. I did hear Chrome say to me, we're not losing. So that's like a little bit of stuff, but it's also like the way he put it as well is it's also obviously Daniel's, you know, LA was Daniel's first, you know, time at LAN. He was getting used to things. He was figuring out how everything worked. Mm-hmm. Now he knows how everything works. He knows that, you know, what's going to happen, but it's Daniel's first trip internationally. So
he's never left the States. Just not just for like play, just at all.
No, I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Wow.
So. That's going to be an interesting one to see whether he can adapt to the London scene and the changes of not being in A. So I definitely feel like it's going to be close. Like, either way I look at it, obviously being in the position that we're in, obviously we for some reason have to root for the teams to lose ideally or get a top six. But I definitely feel like it's going to be a close one. So definitely going to be an interesting one. Now
I have my eyes glued.
We got next FaZe and Power. Now, this is an interesting matchup.
this one, I mean, listen, shout out to the Power Boys. Like, if AJ is not there and he's not comfortable, sure, we might have a chance on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Power are good, but against international competition has been their biggest issue. They do not perform against competition that is, you know, that they are unexpected to beat. You go look at, obviously, you know, they didn't make it to LA, but you go look at Sweden. The two wins they do take are against Renegades and I believe against Tokyo Verde.
Yep.
Like, those are the two teams they beat. They have not really been able to perform against larger teams. I think part of that is that they have a very OCE play style, if that makes sense. They really mm-hmm. do mm-hmm. well against OCE teams, and then against international teams, that play style doesn't necessarily bounce as well.
Yep.
I think FaZe finally figured it out. Listen, I was the biggest critic of FaZe for over almost a year at
really?
This point here.
Where okay.
I didn't think they were flash in the pan, but I just could tell every time that a team that had cohesion played them, they struggled. They struggled against G2, NRG in their heyday. They struggled against NRG. You get into international stages and they're struggling against teams like BDS. Yes, they're taking wins from them, but when it comes, push comes to shove, they end up getting too aggressive. They overexert themselves and all of a sudden it's an easy counter tackle or something similar that happened far too often. That being said, I think they finally ironed out all those issues. The way that they looked coming out of the last regional, I have no words. They finally look like they have put all the pieces of the puzzle together, and both offense and defense look good. I'd like to say Power, but
it's an uphill battle.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's an up mountain.
Yeah,
it's difficult, bro.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be it's definitely going to be an interesting one. I guess to look at in Power's regard, they've been in London for, I think, like 2.5 weeks now, or 2 weeks.
They've been there a long time.
They've been in there a long time. So they've definitely had, you know, a ton of scrims. They've been playing. I know Emphasis has been streaming. He's been, you know, streaming ranked, six mans. So they've definitely been putting in some work. And if AJ, you know, if AJ's arriving on Tuesday potentially, that's going to maybe have some implications. But, you know, with First Killer and Sypicals, you know, if AJ can just chill back a bit, you know, see, but yeah, I feel like it is an uphill battle, and I'm going to go FaZe, but it's definitely going to be a good one to watch.
You got to hope FaZe take that one as well. Like,
I want FaZe. Come on, FaZe.
First time you'll ever see an OCE coach cheering for NA, almost ever. That will be like the only
literally. Because I guess in the Space Station Pioneers one, we can afford for, I guess, Pioneers to win that. It's just if they win two series, mm-hmm. but I guess with Power and FaZe, Power would just have to win one series, so I guess I've got to go against Power every time, right? So
that's the issue. Like, hey, man, listen, at the end of the day, it's nothing personal. It's more just like, hey, we want our spot at Worlds, man. I want to go to Dallas. Like,
that's it.
Feel that.
Deal we that. Feel it. And lucky last. Now, this is interesting. I've had a couple of chats. I had a chat with K-Dog the other day about this one and Thieves. Liquid Falcons. This is interesting because obviously we saw Falcons not with their full roster in Sweden, right? Obviously, they've been mm-hmm. dominating the meta scene. Liquid last regional and the last, I think, last two regionals have started to make a bit of an uproar, starting to find their pace, I feel like, within the scene. And I feel like it's going to be an interesting battle.
This one is always hard for me to talk about because every time I talk about Falcons, people tend to think that I'm a hater of Falcons and that I am not a fan of them. And I'd like to explain. That is not accurate. I do enjoy when they were Sandrock, I was casting them as Sandrock and such.
Mm-hmm.
I have never rated Falcons as hard as most of the planet does. And I think part of that is bias. Part of that is the fact that I've got to see them on their way up. And the other part for me is just that they have not performed to a level that I think that they've proven themselves to be these giant slayers as most people look at them as.
Yeah.
When you go and look at their performance in what's it called? In Sweden. Yes, it's great. It's awesome. I'm happy that, you know, they take a big win. But go look at the teams that they beat. They beat what's it called? They beat, I think it was Power, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they beat G2.
They beat Ground Zero. They beat G2, who everyone agreed was having an issue. Like something was wrong with G2 back then. Mm-hmm. Like they just didn't seem to get their stuff together, whether it was Dries or just a lack of motivation. And they beat Furia, which Furia is a great team. But Fury has also been known to drop the ball during high-pressure situations. It's why they've got into a tiebreaker match in the group stages when you guys beat them. It's like, Furia is not necessarily that end-all, be-all. And then you go and look at the rest of the wins, they don't take any other wins. And then they miss LA, and people are like, okay, they still could be good, but we don't really know. Like, it is one of these things where I am skeptical to think that Falcons are that high up on the list, where a lot of people are having them somewhere between like 6th and 8th overall for this event. They are good. No disrespect to them. They also just lost a land in Saudi Arabia to an unknown team.
Literally, I didn't know that.
Like 2 days ago. So they played in something called the LA3EB Rocket League competition, the Premier Division.
Oh.
They got 3rd place. They didn't just lose. They lost in group stages and then lost again to the same team in playoffs. So they've been a good team, don't get me wrong, but like there's an aura about them that makes people look at them in a greater regard because they are the Middle East. They are the Middle Eastern, like, you know, sure, giants. And I feel like a lot of people are kind of not taking into account the realistic wins that they've taken thus far and are kind of just looking at them as the giant slayers and hoping that the title is enough to have them take down teams.
Definitely.
I think Liquid takes this. I don't think that... I would love to see a Sandrock lower run. I feel like that's a more, Falcons lower run. I feel like that's a more realistic way for them to do it. But I don't know if they're going to be able to take down Liquid. Liquid look good, man. Liquid look very good, man.
Yeah. And people I've seen prediction lists where people have put Falcons like top 4. So
yeah,
like you've said, there's definitely a lot of expectations for Falcons. And obviously they've already clinched Worlds. I think they were the first team to qualify for Worlds or something like that.
Because they didn't lose a regional, right? They won all of the regionals.
So it's going to be interesting. And I think they got there a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I'm super keen to see how they go. That's going to be the hard. And that unfortunately is the matchup of what, like 4 a.m. my time. So
yeah, it's the final one.
That's going to be a struggle to stay up for. But I think they'll be riding on hype at that point, right? So.
I was about to say, you could, like, not to mention also, you gotta really stay up because that's the same time as KCP versus SSG.
Yeah. It'd be interesting.
I'm excited. I don't know, man. All I'm saying is that, like, Falcons are, like, it's not to say they are a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. I just feel like a lot of people have kind of overhyped their accomplishments just for the sake of overhyping their accomplishments to try and make this team seem like there, you know, is that glory behind them. I think... We'll see. Liquid's a big test for them, especially now that Liquid look this good. It's not just the Liquid at the beginning of the season. This is like, oh, this is Liquid. Like, this is what they've been waiting literally 2 years for, and just kind of fluttering around with this roster.
It's going to be interesting. Tyres just said in the chat that Falcons lost to both OC teams in scrims today. Interesting. Apparently looks super slow. I think that scrims an interesting thing to look at, but I don't base scrims.
No, scrims mean nothing at the end of the amount of teams that I've had where they go into a tournament and they go, but man, we just decimated them in scrims. It's been awesome for us in scrims all day. And then they go in and get swept in 2 series in a row. I'm like, I'll think about scrims no more. I just leave them be.
I think I've seen I've been following that Reddit international scrim thread, and I think G2 have lost like 80% of games that I've seen. So, but I still feel like G2 are going to make a good run. It's just finding each groove, you know. They might be testing new things. Falcons, you know, testing new things. We'll see on game day, you know. The biggest thing that I've always said is you don't want to be a practitioner, or not a practitioner, but someone who practices. You want to be a competitor. You want to make sure that come out on game day, that's when you really play, and that's when you put your left foot forward. So it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, there's a lot riding on this one because obviously – especially the OCE teams, it's whether or not they go to Worlds. And, you know, going to London and then not going to Worlds, that's got to be a crushing feeling for either team. Or, you know, I think there's some other teams in there as well that sort of comes up to it. But it's going to be interesting.
All I can say is that I'm so excited for the major, man. I'm so happy that we're back with, like, RL Esports and all that stuff. We had, like, a month off, and I was way too long.
Hell yeah. Love it. Phenomenal. Well, I think we can turn off the gas and start to roll down the engine for the episode there. I think it's been phenomenal. I really appreciate learning, about your mindset regarding casting, the notepad and sort of the phrases and sort of obviously that massive talk about motivation and momentum we had as well. Phenomenal stuff that I think a lot of people, especially, you know, I guess the main audience for Mike Lickers is those younger guys, those 15, 16, 17-year-olds who are looking to get into competitive esports, who are looking to maybe not maybe understand that, you know, being a player isn't the only way, like we talked about. You know, you can be a coach, you can work with broadcasts, you can work on the backstage, you can do so many other things, you know, content or social media. And there's a lot of avenues into esports, and I think it's important to understand that. So I really appreciate you coming on, man, and sort of having that chat and sort of sharing that wisdom, because I think a lot of people will truly take away some of those really things you talked about to heart. So I really do appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. This was I always love having conversations like this, just about esports as a whole, the philosophies behind it, the philosophies behind both casting and the way that it sort of intertwines with esports, if that makes sense. Like, there are sort of those connections, like we said, that feeling on LAN is obviously going to be different for both the people behind the scenes as well as the people who are playing these events. But I do think that, like, for any of the people who are sort of listening to the conclusion of this and have heard of what I've been thinking, if you are interested in getting into esports, just try something. See whether it's playing, whether it's managing, coaching, being on air, being behind the scenes talent, like you're the broadcast manager or you're the head observer or you're doing admin work, you're scheduling where players go. There are so many avenues right now to get into esports like there have never been. And I always encourage someone to at least try. I guess that's like, if there's one takeaway here, try it. See what happens. I did this as a joke on Twitch, and now it's my career. That's how it goes. There's a waterfall effect eventually.
Love that. I was going to ask for your takeaway, but you gave it anyway. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Perfect.
That's what we always do at the end of the episode. Phenomenal. For everyone obviously listening, I'll put it in the description as well, but where can we find you on all your social medias and to follow you and Snapchat with what you're doing?
Bass from the past. That is the former, I mean, technically it's still my title as well, but I mostly go by Oliver Bass on cast nowadays, but at Bass from the past for I think all my social medias. The only one I don't have that on is on Instagram, which I should probably get an Instagram, but the guy who has my name, I asked him to get it from him and he asked for $300. So no, I don't have an Instagram right now. Yeah, $300, man. He's like $300 for the name. And I never responded. I'm like, I'm not paying you $300 for anything. No way. Not a chance. So I don't have an Instagram, but everywhere else, Bass in the past.
Beautiful. Phenomenal. And maybe one day we'll have it, but I don't think that's any soon. Because he's not getting $300. Phenomenal. I'll chuck it in the description for everyone listening, so make sure to check out that. But look, Oliver, it was fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that wisdom for everyone listening, and hopefully they can take away some really good points from the episode.
Hopefully so. I appreciate you having me on again. This has been a show. Like, I've watched the last two episodes. I really enjoyed the last two ones, especially, like, Nick's my boy. So when I heard he was on, I was like, oh, yes, let's watch this. Let's see everything that Nick got to say about it. So, yeah, really appreciate you having me on.
Phenomenal. Fantastic. And for everyone listening, make sure to check out the description and stay up to date on Twitter as well at MindClickers and also on TikTok now. I've got my boy Fernando helping me push out some TikToks from all the best bits of all the episodes. So we'll have some best bits of this episode and all the previous episodes coming out to TikTok as well now. So make sure to follow MindClickers there as well. Really appreciate you coming on and see you in the next episode.